Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tillman at 10 continues. Hour number two, brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. Of course, he'll beat anyone's advertised price, or your mattress is free. We've got tickets for Stevie Wonder's 21st annual House of Toys benefit concert coming up in just a little bit with Dave Matthews, Tony Bennett, Pharrell Williams, and many other special guests. So you're not going to want to miss that. I urge you to call if you want to play the news quiz as soon as I announce it, because the lines light up big time. In just a moment, we're going to talk to Aaron David Miller about the Middle East and the Trump's announcement yesterday about Palestine. But I wanted to do a quick update with Jim Roop, KBC News contributor, as far as what's going on with the fires out there that are affecting everybody. Good morning, Jim.
And a very good morning. It's pretty much status quo as far as the Skirball fire goes. You still have 475 acres burned, four homes destroyed, 12 damaged. That's 20% contained, however, contained on the west side, which would be Sepulveda in the 405. At least that's where they have the area contained enough that they can walk away from and work on something else. It is the Thomas Fire in Ventura that has burned north and west through the town of La Conchita, and that knows its share of disaster. If you remember 2005, that mudslide up there that killed 10 people and buried several homes. Several homes burned there, and is moving west and north, continuing into Santa Barbara County. So that's 96,000 acres now, and roughly 5% contained. By far, nothing is done just yet, and this is going to be another day. The winds we feel once in a while, we think they're going to increase, but they kind of stay at bay a little bit. Still, it's going to be one of those days of extremes across all four fires here.
Are they shifting manpower up north because that fire is so enormous, and now they're worried about Ojai, too, that if it reaches that Ojai Valley, that the thing can just rip right through there?
Yeah, it's pretty much there. Ojai's been evacuated. At least several communities in Ojai has been evacuated. We have many resources that are ping-ponging back and forth. We took 15 engines yesterday down into the Skirball fire from there. Those were sent back up. A lot of aircraft came down here yesterday. Those have been sent back up. So it's this ping-pong effort that's been going on. We have 300 engines coming in from other states, from Oregon, from Nevada, from Arizona. We have bulldozers working the L.A. fire from the south because L.A.'s bulldozers are at the Creek fire or at up north at the Ventura fire. So there's this big sharing and round Lazy Susan situation with the resources that seem to be going on. But it seems to be working, because other than water pressure, there hasn't been a whole lot to be concerned about as far as resources go.
And also, they're telling you, because of this, because of the winds, pay attention, because anything can happen at any time. You could be asked to evacuate, even if you think, oh, we've dodged a bullet here. They're saying the wind shifts, and the fact that they're kicking up to 60 and 70 miles per hour, all bets are off. So keep listening, pay attention, and we'll keep you posted. And Jim, thanks for the great job you're doing. I know how many hours you're working, and the same with the firefighters are incredible. To the point of exhaustion, these guys work and then have to find a couple feet on the ground, anywhere they can, to lie down and kind of get a nap so they can go back out there and fight it. So it's a Herculean effort, especially with all these fires. And I thank you, Jim, for the job. I appreciate it.
You bet.
KBC News contributor, and his website is jimroop.com, the Twitter at jimroop, K-A-B-C. We're joined now by Aaron David Miller. He is Vice President for New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, former State Department advisor, analyst, and negotiator in both the Republican and Democratic administrations, author of The End of Greatness, Why America Can't Have and Doesn't Want Another Great President. And also, you were negotiating under six secretaries of state as an advisor on the Arab-Israeli negotiations. And I wanted to get your sense, Aaron, since you were in the midst of it, you did it, on why the president would do what he did, moving the embassy to Jerusalem now. Why at this point in time? I know it was a promise of his, a campaign promise. I know that Netanyahu was very close to Jared Kushner's family. But I've got to think diplomatically that they had some ducks lined up in a row, and it may be that Saudi Arabia is all in at this point because they need Israel is an ally now against the common enemy, which is Iran. So maybe there's some moving pieces to this that aren't so obvious. What do you think? And good morning.
Well, I'd hope so. And let me say, first of all, I'm really sorry for what's going on out there in California. I did a CNN interview this morning, and it really, really looks grim. So, my prayers are with everybody out there. Look, we dodged Jerusalem for 20 plus years, and I came up with a lot of half-baked ideas for a lot of secretaries of state. But one of the ideas that was not half-baked was, unless you really had to deal with the Jerusalem issue, that there was some imperative, some urgency, some need that would serve the American national interest, don't get into this. It has no solution. There's no resolution to this. The mistrust on this issue is profound between the Israelis and Palestinians. We've seen it blow up four or five times in the last 15 years, particularly on the overlapping sacred space, the Haram al-Sharif, which has the two mosques, and the remains of the first and second Jewish temples that lie below. I think this has nothing to do with foreign policy, Peter. I think that the president does, in fact, want to fulfill a campaign commitment. He wants to separate himself from his predecessor. He wants to demonstrate that he, in fact, is probably the most pro-Israeli president since Harry Truman. And it was the end of the year. He hates exercising the national security waiver, which he did in June. His advisors, MM&T, Mattis, McMaster, and Tillerson, all advised him against this. But he likes breaking icons and undermining conventions. And it was the end of the year, and it's on the to-do list. So we went ahead and did it. I don't think there's a broader strategy afoot here. And I think, even though the peace process is, to say the least, I would describe it as comatose, you don't want to basically bury it. And that's really the risk, I think, of what's happened.
Okay, so in hearing you say that, I know that Jared Kushner has been to the Middle East many, many times, a lot of trips over there. And I don't know who else has accompanied him or who else is reaching out to Abbas, who's reaching out to Netanyahu, who's reaching out. I know that Jared Kushner also has a relationship with the new young prince in Saudi Arabia. Does that at all make you sit back and think, well, maybe there is something going on behind the scenes
that I
haven't seen, that I don't understand, that there's some brokering? Because the Saudis, it's a different position right now. You have a different regime over there at this point. The Middle East is looking differently. And by the way, Trump inherited a Middle East that now has what percentage is under 30, unemployed, looking at a future where oil is becoming less competitive, the prices are going down, and going, well, where are we going to be in the next 20 years? And it could foment an uprising, foment change. So the whole Middle East looks very unstable at this point. Is there something to that, all of those pieces added, connected together, where you say, okay, there's some movement, there's going to be some major change, this is going to be part of that?
Well, you've seen the major change since 2011. It was called the Arab Spring, and it turns out to be anything other than a spring. And the change has been transformative. It's created tremendous uncertainty, explosions, and the instability in at least four Arab states, Libya, Yemen, Syria, and Iraq. I don't see the pieces coming together. I think the Israeli-Palestinian issue has a certain logic and coherence all of its own. I think that there are no shortcuts on this. The reason we don't have a deal between Israelis and Palestinians, you remember the old expression, in the history of the world, nobody ever washed a rental car? You don't wash rental cars because you care only about what you own. And there's insufficient ownership. I'm not being critical, but there's insufficient ownership. Why? Because the costs and risks of taking on the six core issues that represent the Palestinian issue, border, security, Jerusalem, refugees, recognition of Israel as the nation state of the Jews, and end of claims and conflict, those are unbelievably difficult issues. And neither Mahmoud Abbas nor Benjamin Netanyahu are prepared, willing, and or able to make the kinds of decisions required to get close enough so that a third party, let's say it's Jared Kushner, could bridge the gaps. And that's why I think, look, this isn't the end of the world, what the president did. And there are many people, I would count myself among them, who understand that our policy on Jerusalem, at least as it pertains to the Israelis, is completely unrealistic. I mean, Israel is one of the few, not the only, one of the few countries in the world in which we do not maintain an embassy in the preferred capital of the host country. But, as I know well from my 20-plus years, one guy's ceiling is another guy's floor. So if you basically are going to say that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel, and you don't try to address in some way that's significant and resonant, the reality, whether you like it or not, whether it's comfortable and convenient or not, you have another ethnic national group, the Palestinians, who aspire to a capital in half of the city. So you're left with a very difficult proposition. And right now, even though I think we're going to be spared the massive uprisings of the first and second intifada, and you're quite right, the fix is in with the Arabs, particularly Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, as they call him, who's established a very close relationship with the Trump administration, particularly with Jared Kushner. Saudis see Iran and the Sunni jihadis as a far greater threat than Israel.
Right.
Far greater threat. So there, yes, there is some community of interest there, but translating all of that, all these disparate pieces, into a coherent negotiating approach by the Trump administration in the wake of what happened yesterday is going to be extremely difficult. Let me put it this way. Without a legitimate Palestinian claim to a capital in East Jerusalem and having that as part of the deal, there isn't going to be a two-state solution. Now, there are many other reasons why there won't be one, but we've just gone and made Jared Kushner's job harder. I met him a few months ago, and I said to him, I wish my father-in-law had as much confidence in me as your father-in-law appears to have in you, because he's given you Mission Impossible. Well, that Mission Impossible has become even more impossible.
What is your sense of Jared Kushner? How much time did you spend with him?
Not a lot. You know, I mean, I'm 68, right? I've devoted almost as many years to working on this problem and analyzing as Jared Kushner has years. I found him to be smart, preternaturally modest, at least in the way he presents himself. And the other guy who's working on this, Jason Greenblatt, I've never met him, but from what I understand, he listens with a view to trying to understand the various positions and needs and requirements of both sides. So I don't know where this is going
to
end up.
Did Jared Kushner reach out to you, Aaron, for expertise, or did you seek him out? How did that meeting come together?
I think we'll just kind of leave that in the vault.
Okay.
But I think someone asked me the other day, but they don't have any experience. And I said to them, you can get advisors. You can get people like me to provide the advice. What a good mediator needs is the capacity to understand as fairly and honestly as he or she can the needs and requirements of both sides. Not sympathy, but a degree of empathy so that you can at least begin to figure out the nature of the problem so that you can devise approaches to deal with it. So you don't need to be a Middle East expert. You can find guys like me all over. What you need is a sense of how to negotiate, how to relate to people, how to create a sense that you have their trust and confidence. And then, since it's all about a balance of interests, like good marriages, good business propositions, good friendships, both sides have to get what they need out of this. You got to figure out a way to make sure that the needs and requirements of both sides are met.
Okay, so
and
to that
we
point.
We didn't do that. The president did not do that yesterday.
To that point, because we only have about 2 minutes left and I could talk to you about this forever.
Sure.
When the president makes a deal like this, don't you usually get something in return from Israel like, hey, stop building and expanding settlements in the West Bank, and we can make that announcement and say, bingo, I'm going to proclaim Jerusalem as the capital. But on the other hand, we got some concessions, so you can show them to the other side. So it doesn't look like it was a unilateral commitment, or that Jared Kushner's family is close to Netanyahu, or we're all in for Israel.
Right.
So it looks like there's something that was given up in a negotiation here. Was that a mistake,
right,
or was that intentional?
Well, my good friend Tom Friedman just proposed that in an op-ed, I think, in yesterday's New York Times. Look, and Mr. Trump is presumably the transactional man. I'm not going to give anything unless I get something in return. In the case of Jerusalem, in the narrow case of recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, Mr. Netanyahu would be hard-pressed to pay anything for what he believes to be the sovereign right of any nation to establish its capital where he wants it to be and to have the international community recognize it. Had they not done this now, had they waited during for a moment during the course of a negotiation where it could be traded for something significant,
right.
You're 100% right. But to try to do it now would never have worked. And good luck trying to impose a comprehensive settlement freeze.
I got it. So with a minute left, how do you, and this is the most simplistic question, 101, how do you negotiate when the truth is that most of these people want Israel obliterated? They want a pan-Arab continent. And Israel represents democracy. It represents a foreign military base for us. It represents intel for us in the Mideast. And so many want to see it just blown up, even when you're talking about agreements. So how do you get past that when you want to?
Well, I mean, the Egyptians and the Israelis managed to get past it. The Israelis and the Jordanians managed to get past it. And remember, this is the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty, and Sisi and Netanyahu are closer now than ever before, Egypt and Israel. It's a question of national self-interest. You need leaders who are prepared to rise above their narrow circumstances and become masters, not prisoners, of their own ideologies and their own politics. And you don't have those. You don't have a Sadat and Begin. You don't have a King Hussein and a Rabin. You don't even have, in the early stages of the Oslo Accord, Rabin told me once, he had a real hard time with Arafat, but he realized that Arafat had done a really tough thing in order to agree to an interim deal. It didn't work out so well, and Rabin didn't live to see it. But you need leaders. You don't have those. And we cannot replace or create the political will that is required between Arabs and Israelis, and Israelis and Palestinians to do this deal. It's just too hard.
Aaron, thanks for coming on. It's always a gift to have you on. Aaron David Miller, Vice President of the New Initiatives and Distinguished Scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, former State Department Advisor, analyst and negotiator in Republican and Democrat administrations, author of The End of Greatness, Why America Can't Have and Doesn't Want Another Great President, and the website, wilsoncenter.org, and the Twitter, at Aaron D. Miller, too. And he's got amazing insight because he's been doing it his entire life. And I always happen to have them. All right. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Coming up, Stevie Wonder's 21st Annual House of Toys Benefit Concert. We'll talk about that. Also, of course, the big news today is Al Franken stepped down. Why? We'll talk about that. And then a bunch of other stories, too, like General Electric's going to cut a lot of jobs. I'll explain. And when Peter Tilton at 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Tilton at 10 continues right now. So, boy, Commissioner Roger Goodell handled disciplinary matters poorly, a lot of the domestic violence things poorly, head injury claims, the repercussions now are coming back, television ratings are slightly down, Jerry Jones went after him, and he just reportedly signed a five-year extension worth up to $200 million. Could you imagine how much he would be making if he did a wonderful job at the league? It's a great job of working with billionaires and trillionaires. When they give you $40 million a year, it looks like a pittance to them. Mark in the Valley, you're on Talk Radio 790 KBC. What do you want to say?
Hey, Peter, I just wanted to thank you for I got the Trans-Siberian Orchestra tickets last week, and it was fabulous.
Isn't that a great show? Oh, you're very, very welcome. I'm glad that you got to go. I told you, it's a mind-blowing show. It's like Pink Floyd meets I don't know what, but very, very, very cool show.
It's a rock and roll Christmas.
You got it. Well, thanks. And by the way, I'm going to send you to see Stevie Wonder. Speaking of gifts that I can give you, call right now, 800-222-5222. He's going to be appearing at the 21st Annual House of Toys Benefit Concert. With him will be Dave Matthews, Tony Bennett, Pharrell Williams, and many, many more. It's going to be at the Staples Center. It's going to be a huge night. Stevie's one of my favorite artists. He's going to be playing tunes from Inner Visions, one of the best albums ever. And I'm going to give you a chance to win those tickets right now. Call 800-222-5222, and we'll play the Peter Tilden News Quiz next, right after the news here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
KABC News live and local at 11:30. I'm Jeff Whittle. Minnesota Senator Al Franken announced today he'll resign a Senate seat in the coming weeks after being accused of sexual misconduct by several women, including KABC's own Leanne Tweeden, who released a statement this morning which reads in part, quote, when I spoke out about how Al Franken forcibly kissed me backstage during a USO tour and groped me while I was asleep on the plane ride home. I never called for his resignation. He later apologized multiple times, and I accepted his apology. But as I said in my initial statement, I'm telling my story because there may be others, and there were. Yesterday, a seventh and eighth woman spoke out, and even more have reached out to me but are unwilling to talk to the press. After experiencing many violent partisan personal attacks on my credibility since I went public, I don't blame these women one bit. A little later on, she says, I want to thank the women of the United States Senate who stood up yesterday and said this cannot continue. I want to thank their male colleagues who have joined them, end quote. You can read Leanne's entire statement on KABC.com. And firefighters have increased their containment of the 475-acre Skirball fire in Bel Air to 20% today, but evacuees still can't return home, according to L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti.
It looks much calmer, and by many measures it is, but as we know, there are a lot of hot spots, and a lot of hot spots right next to homes. So we are not moving, recommending people come back. We're not allowing people to come back right now. We will make a decision about that later this afternoon, and we will announce that to the public, hopefully around 3 this afternoon.
The blaze has destroyed 4 homes, damaged a dozen others. The 12,000-acre Creek Fire in Sylmar, now 10% contained after destroying 15 homes, damaging 15 others. 2,500 more homes are still threatened. The Thomas Fire in Ventura County is now 96,000 acres with only 5% containment. Evacuations have been ordered for Ojai, but firefighters were able to keep the flames from reaching that city overnight. Now, Carpinteria and La Conchita remain threatened as well, and a fire scorched only about a half acre of brush in Malibu this morning, briefly threatened some homes before firefighters knocked it down. Talk radio, 790 KABC Sports. LeVar Ball telling ESPN his sons LiAngelo and LaMelo have signed with an agent, and he wants them to play on the same team overseas, ending speculation that LaMelo will play for the UCLA Bruins starting in 2019 as he had planned. And LiAngelo left UCLA just recently after being suspended from the team indefinitely for shoplifting in China. Now, the Clippers lost to Minnesota 113-107 for their fourth straight defeat last night. The Lakers visit Philadelphia this afternoon, having lost 5 in a row. Ducks blanked Ottawa 3-0. The L.A. Kings will host Ottawa this afternoon, looking for their 7th straight win. That game starts at 7 p.m. right here on KABC. That's sports on the home of the L.A. Kings, 790 KABC. Traffic, a market check, weather, and more Tilden at 10 next. KABC News Time, 1134.
Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10, continues. Hour number 2, this is when we do the news quiz. Where you learn a whole lot about what's going on in the news, where you play along, or you actually win tickets, and hopefully Barry will be one of those people. Barry, the lines were full. We picked you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I feel so lucky to be a part of the news quiz. I listen every day, and I'm excited.
Thank you, Barry. What do you do?
I am a technical recruiter. I hire a lot of nerds and geeks who can write software programs.
Guess what? They will take our future over. The nerds will rule at this point, won't they?
They already have, in every sense, Peter.
Those are the fields to go into. So you're a smart man. You're in the right thing. Let's see how smart you are as far as the news. Multiple choice. True and false. You said you listen every day, so listen carefully, and here we go.
Okay.
Who was the latest politician to resign in the aftermath of sexual harassment allegations? Is it A, Alabama Senator Roy Moore? B, Minnesota Senator Al Franken, or C, President Morgan Freeman? Is it A, B, or C?
As much as I would like to say President Morgan Freeman, I'm gonna have to go with B. Al Franken
resigned. I think he took one for the team. My guess is they called him. They said, "Dude, you got 8 women accusing you. We got to get to high ground at this point, so we can go after the president and after Mr. Moore. You're out of here," and that's apparently what happened. And people aren't happy with his resignation and what he said, but that will continue. We'll talk about that next segment. Parliament of what country officially voted to legalize gay marriage today? Was it A, Australia, B, Belgium, or C, Lawrence County, Alabama? Which country would that be? Is it A, B, or C?
I'm going to go with A.
A! In Canberra, Parliament's final session of the year on Thursday, lawmakers engaged in a lengthy debate as several amendments put forward by opponents of the bill to legalize same-sex marriage were voted down. The Australian Parliament voted 146-4 in support of same-sex marriage. So there you go. Did Donald Trump slur his speech during yesterday's press conference about the U.S. officially recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel? Is it A, yes, B, no, or C, kofeve? A, A, B, or C?
Well, I'm gonna have to go with A, and I'd like to say that everybody's been saying that Trump should get a grip, but none of us knew it would be polygrip.
Look at you doing the jokes in the morning show. And if you didn't hear it, by the way, here's just the end of it.
God bless the United States.
Yeah, it sounds like my grandfather. It's true. I've heard that before, and it was my grandparents. My grandfather had dentures, and I heard the United States. Ford has announced plans to move production of electric SUVs from Michigan to A, Mississippi, B, Mexico, C, China. A, B, or C?
I'm going to go with B.
Yeah, they're changing gears again in Mexico, shifting planned production of a small electric-powered sport utility vehicle to a plant south of the border instead of a Michigan factory. Sending the electric vehicle to Mexico, where labor costs are lower, will help the business case for the costly model. It also risks raising the ire of President Donald Trump, who had been sharply critical of an earlier plan by Ford to build a small car factory in Mexico. According to a report from financial website Millennial Personal Finance, what city is the most expensive place in America for holiday shopping? Is it A, Marin County, California, B, Oahu, Hawaii, or C, Washington, D.C.? A, B, or C?
Probably Washington, D.C., with all that politics going on.
Holiday shopping. It's always been expensive there, and the District of Columbia costs more than in any of the 50 states, according to a report from financial website Millennial Personal Finance. And D.C. shoppers pay 289% more than the national average on gifts.
Wow.
Also of note, Alaskans pay nearly double the national average in eight other states. Hawaii, New York, Michigan, New Jersey, California, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Maryland, people will fork about 20% more to buy gifts during the holidays. What auto manufacturer had the most cars on the 2018 Insurance Institute for Highway Safety's list for the safest cars in America? Was it A, Volvo, B, Toyota, or C, Chevrolet? A, B, or C?
Let's go with B.
You got it. Toyota led the industry with 10 vehicles on the top safety picks or top safety picks list. Much smaller, Hyundai was second with 9 models. Even as automakers make significant safety improvements to new vehicles, more people are dying on American roads. Car crash deaths spiked in the U.S. for a second consecutive year. I have a feeling that's because of distracted driving. And there's a couple of stories about that, too, where you can now shop in your car. And then the last question for you, and the number of flu cases so far in 2017, the U.S. is what? How much more than in 2016? A, slightly less, B, slightly more, or C, more than double? Is it A, B, or C?
Let's go with C, Peter.
Yeah, more than 7,000 cases of influenza have been confirmed in the U.S. so far this flu season. So not good, but you were good, Barry. You did a great thing.
You're
a smart man, and I appreciate you listening every day and your loyalty there. So hang on the line. Dino will get your tickets to Stevie Wonder's 21st Annual House of 20 Benefit Concert.
Peter.
Yeah, and you be safe. Everybody be safe because of the fires, and have a great holiday. And we'll be back. Going to talk about, as a matter of fact, General Electric cutting jobs and Toys R Us's bankruptcy. All that and more when Peter Tilden at 10 continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KABC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues hour number two. So, this story, I'm reading it and I'm going, all right, I don't understand. Maybe I don't understand running big business, but you got a bankruptcy proceedings are underway for Toys R Us, and they've got this holiday season, and this is the toy giving season, right? This is when you buy the gifts. So they got these looming bankruptcy proceeding, and they went to their creditors in November with this request, ready? To boost holiday sales, this company, which is insolvent, said, let us pay out millions of dollars in bonuses to our top executives. And you go, in what world does that make sense? But here's the rationale. Toys R Us will pay 17 executives $14 million in incentive bonuses as long as they hit a target of an earnings target, okay? Which, by the way, these executives will make sure that they hit before any bonuses are awarded. The problem is you can Mickey the books to make it look like you sold certain stuff, and other companies have done that. Attorneys for the company argued that the bonuses would help encourage executives to focus on driving up sales. Isn't that your job? To drive up sales during the holiday season. So you got a company that's insolvent, and yet you're looking at a ton of money here for these folks. I guess they don't get it if they don't hit this number, but nevertheless, it's pretty wild. The senior management team must be properly motivated and incentivized to handle the responsibilities attending to their two full-time jobs, which is the bankruptcy and the day-to-day business. The Department of Justice attorney went out of their mind. She's representing the creditors, and they said the bonuses are excessive based on the company's financial situation, which is dire straits. Her quote was, it defies logic and wisdom. These people should want to pull this company out of the fire without these bonuses, because then the company will continue to exist and they will have their jobs. But the judge listening to this, after 5 hours, he gave the bonus plan the green light. So these guys will get a bonus. I guess that's the only way you can incentivize executives in a company that's failing, or maybe they'll bail, is to give them millions and millions and millions of dollars in bonuses. Another sad story is that General Electric is going to cut 12,000 jobs in their power division. They've got a new guy that replaced Jeffrey Immelt, who's the CEO. And here's what the company said, that coal and gas product sales are down because of overcapacity. I mean, they have too much, and lower usage because of all the renewable energy and other factors. So here we are trying to bring back coal, and they're saying we got too much coal and gas products, and people aren't really really using it as much because we got so much renewable energy and other factors. So, I mean, GE, wow, growing up, they owned light bulbs, and they owned lending, and a lot of wide-ranging businesses, and now they're paring down. The power division is going to lose 12,000 jobs. They haven't specified exactly where, but that's going to hurt the economy quite a bit as this company downsizes and tries to get lean and mean. All right, Talk Radio 790 KBC coming up. We will do Crosstalk with Dr. Drew.